to announce before we get into the show. I've been on a couple of interviews recently. They're all linked over on my Telegram. Two YouTube interviews, one with Blunt Clarity and one with Natasha Hauer, and also a live stream that I did with the Patriotic Christian. So check those out because they're three good interviews with me on YouTube. And look, even if you don't listen to them all, please go and give them a like. Please go and leave a supportive comment. It helps with the algorithm and it gets our message out there. I'm banned from having my own channel, but I'm still someone that people can interview. So if you wish to go and help me out there, you can. Now, I've also started a Substack. Please support that if you can. I've got about 12 articles up there already. I'm doing two long form articles a week, which are usually between about 3,000 and 4,000 words. And I've published my biggest article to date yesterday. It's on the killing of Henry Nowak, a British Polish boy who was walking home one night when he was attacked by a Sikh who stabbed him. And when the police arrived, the Sikh claimed that he'd been racially abused. So despite the fact Henry Nowak was lying in a pool of his own blood, struggling to breathe and screaming in pain, the police restrained him, pinned him, handcuffed him and left him there bleeding until he fell unconscious, at which point they called an ambulance. But sadly, the ambulance didn't arrive in time and he passed away. Now, the shocking nature of this case is Henry Nowak was pleading for his life, saying, "I've been stabbed, I'm dying, please help me." But the police took the words of the Sikh man instead of the white boy, leaving the white boy to die. Now, I've written about 4,000 words on this and it's been shared kindly by Steve Laws and also by a number of others today on X. So I thank them, including James Goddard. So I thank them for sharing that. It's got some real traction. It's been read 5,000 times already. I'm not tooting my own horn, but it is the most comprehensive coverage to date of the incident. I lay everything out. And actually, Tommy Robinson's mentioned it today, and that's because I mentioned him in my article. My article's going viral on X. I called him out for not mentioning it because he was a Sikh who did the stabbing. Tommy loves the Sikhs. Some people are angry because I've mentioned Tommy Robinson, not mentioning him. But now Tommy Robinson has mentioned him. So it looks like there's an inaccuracy in the article. There's not. I called Tommy out for ignoring this. Tommy has now started talking about the case. So that's down to me. I didn't do this for the drama. I did this because it's important to call those people out. But please check out that article. You can also subscribe to me there and make a donation. And if you can, that's really appreciated, because the next thing I'm going to say is I've got a lot of plans later this week. I've got a stream on Friday. I've also got the Dr. David Duke show tomorrow afternoon, and then I've got a stream on Sunday night. But remember, Entropy is gone. My biggest source of income every month is now gone. You can only subscribe to me on Substack. You can only financially support me through Rumble. The places you can help me are getting fewer and fewer. But please do, if you can, please make a donation live on stream tonight. We'll answer them in the second half of the show. And if you can't, if you prefer to help through Substack, please go and do that. And I'm doing such good work there because no one else is talking about these big issues in the same way that I am. I've spent hours today penning a large explanation of all of the Jewish and Israeli groups that were involved in defeating Thomas Massie in the primaries. That's another 4,000 word article. I'm working so hard on this. I'm working so hard on all the interviews. No one's doing as much work as I am. I think, and I mean that not as a flex, but as genuinely, I am working very hard to get the message out, even though I'm heavily banned. Please, please do help me if you can. Also, a little bit of good news. We have won the first part of our case against the Swedish government's travel ban against me. That was made public today. A court in Sweden has ruled that the travel ban against me was incorrect and unlawful. So hopefully that's a step towards getting me banned from being able to travel to essentially any country in the Western world. To do that, I had to spend money of my own as well. I had to go to the police in the UK. I had to get them to issue me with a certificate proving that I had no criminal record, was not involved in any terrorism or any kind of financial irregularities, a document that they had to provide by law. So, yeah, that's going quite well. We've made that public, so some good news there. Anyway, let's get into the show. Oh, by the way, if you want to support me in other ways, you can support me live in Rumble. You can support me anytime through Substack. You can also support via crypto, and you can write to me at Market for a Western Man. Sorry about the long intro. Lots of things to discuss, and I've been working really hard. I just wanted to say, please go and share that article about Henry Novak if you can, anywhere you can, because it is such comprehensive coverage. And if you look at the research that I've done, it's unrivaled. No one else has put a piece together like that. And it's important to get the full facts on this issue out. Anyway, Blair, it's great to have you here tonight. I can't thank you enough for coming on. I'm really sorry for getting you out of bed. You're obviously the guy in Australia that I've worked with the most. You're the guy that I've shared the most. And you're the guy that I sort of have been closest to over the years in terms of not only working with, but also sort of admiring in the way that you've stuck with this for so long. You've been through so much. You face so much pressure yourself, but you've also been a great role model and helped young men with their physical fitness, their mental health, their diet, their presentation, and all manner of things that's helped genuinely improve their lives. Many nationalists focus on the big macro issues, but you've helped people improve their lives on that micro level that makes a difference to that day-to-day grind. You are a real hero of our people, and you're one of the few people that has inspired people, you know, all over the world with everything that you've done. You know, I remember you from your early days out on the street and the way you got people talking, even here in the UK, because you hit the headlines, you know, in the British press. But it's great to have you on again. Sorry for getting you up so early in the morning and sorry for the long intro. I hope you're okay. How have you been since we've last spoke?
Thanks, mate, for having me on again. It's great to be back. And I did hear about the situation with the lad being stabbed by the Sikh through the work you're doing. So well done on that. I appreciate that. Everyone should appreciate that. Horrendous story. Hard to believe, actually. But then when you put all the pieces together, it's not that hard to believe where we're at politically in the West. How have I been? Well, you're going to have to deal with my eye being a bit inflamed. I was mowing my lawns yesterday and they were getting out of control. The weeds in Australia, can't really describe how aggressive they can be. So it was longer than it should have been, and something flicked up and hit me in the eye just underneath. But ever since then, it's been a bit red, but I'm sure we can work around it. Yeah, it's early in the morning, but situation in Australia is pretty extreme, has become pretty extreme in the past few months. And for the first time since the 1950s, the Australian government has just banned a political party. They're trying to block a political party from existing on the basis of its ideology. That hasn't happened since 1951. The government has not tried to do that since 1951 in Australia. They failed in 1951. It was under a prime minister named Menzies. He tried to ban the Communist Party of Australia. The High Court said no. They struck it down and said, you can't just dissolve a whole political party like that. That goes against democracy and the principles of democracy. But Menzies still wasn't done. He took a referendum to the people to try to change the constitution so political parties could be banned. But the Australian people voted it down and said no. Now, you would think that creates a pretty strong legal precedent for Australian government never trying to ban political parties again, but apparently not. They're trying it again right now, and they're trying it with a group called the White Australia Party, which some friends of mine are involved in that. They were running it. They had the members. They had all the boxes ticked. I think they had 1,800 members, which was 300 more than they needed to register. They even had letters from lawyers outlining that everything was legal, everything was above board, because they knew the Electoral Commission would probably give them some problems. But the government has just stepped in and used new hate crime legislation they introduced after an Islamic terror attack that occurred late last year. Even though White Australia or Australian nationalism had nothing to do with that Islamic terror attack, that was the incident that was used as the excuse to create a whole new threshold of crime called hate crime, which is now being used specifically to ban the White Australia Party. Pretty crazy stuff. And as we explore this issue, as we talk about it, understand that the situation in Australia right now is one where it's pretty easy for me to say something where I can just be arrested tomorrow and put in jail for supporting a banned or prohibited hate group or something like that. So I'm going to take my time in articulating this. I'm going to really think about what I'm going to say. So just bear with me. But as we move through the conversation, I'll do my best for us to gain an understanding of how the guys are going to try to get around this, how they're trying to secure free political communication and political participation in the future. Because obviously, if this does go through, if this is allowed to stand, then in the future, the government can just ban political parties on ideological grounds. They can say, we think your ideology is morally repugnant, so you're banned as a hate group. You don't have to do anything illegal. You don't have to commit any crimes. There doesn't have to be any proof that you've done anything illegal or committed any crimes. They can just decide to ban you because they don't like what you believe. That's what this means. Very extreme stuff.
Well, when I saw this, I was a little bit perplexed, and I was perplexed for two reasons. Firstly, I thought they would move against the NSN as a group, and I expected them to claim that sort of National Socialism was a inherently hateful ideology linked to terrorism. I was expecting that, and I was expecting that for a number of reasons. Obviously, there have been cases against Jacob Hersant, there have been cases against Tom Sewell, and there have been cases against Joel Davis, and I expected them to tie numerous things together to say, this is what we think of the ideology. These are examples of people that are involved that we are taking legal criminal action against. But I was surprised that this came against the White Australia Party, because the White Australia Party is a separate organisation. It is a party that has the required number of signatures. It clearly has thousands of people willing to sign up to get it registered as a political party. And that's slightly more unprecedented. It's always easier to ban a loose association of people who identify as some kind of group than it is a political party. And it's interesting you brought up the 1951 case, because as I was researching this show, I did see the only other example of a political party that attempted to be banned in Australian history was the Communist Party. Now, my first thing with this is, obviously, Tom is fighting this in court. They are fighting this in the High Court. I don't know if you have any insight into this, but what would you say the chances are of the High Court going in the favour, or at least giving White Australia members relief whilst the case is being heard? How fair is the Australian legal system? Because here in the UK, the most recent group to be banned or outlawed was a group called Palestine Action. Now, I know they're not the same as us, but they are an anti-Zionist organisation. And although they were banned by the state, the High Court judged that the ban was unlawful and have attempted to reverse that. Now, the government are appealing that decision, but there are cases of groups in the UK that have fought this. How successful do you think White Australia will be? Because the Communist Party were successful in 1951, weren't they?
They were successful in remaining a registered party, but they weren't successful in generating any real political power in Australia. And that's the concerning thing, Mark. It's what's happening on the surface, ostensibly, visibly, and legally, is never as bad as what's actually happening where you can't see. And so the activity or the efforts certain government agencies will be making to disrupt and break these guys up where you can't see, that's what's most concerning. Objectively speaking, if you want to look at this without any opinion or without leaning to either side, like you're not really leaning towards the government's decision or you're not leaning towards support for White Australia either, the High Court should rule in their favour based on legal precedent. The law should be on their side. That's Tom Sewell's understanding, I think, which is why he's making the effort and spending the money to take the matter to the High Court in the first place. The High Court should grant injunctive relief today. The first hearing will be today. It's being listed as the White Australia Party versus the Commonwealth of Australia. Massive stuff. This is like huge news. I don't know why anything else has even been talked about before this in Australia right now. This is massive. And what will be decided today is whether some injunctive relief will be provided. And what that means is a High Court judge will decide whether she will provide advocates or former members of the White Australia Party with special protections from the law until the law is reviewed and weighed up against the Constitution to see if it's constitutionally valid, which you would think that every law would work that way. You would think that legislators can't just write laws without them even being reviewed and as constitutionally valid. And then police can just arrest people based on those laws, even though they haven't been reviewed to see if they're valid. And the law is really strange when you think about it, because legislators, politicians can just write laws and then the police can just go, yep, and just start arresting people. And it hasn't even been proven whether those laws are legit or valid when weighed up against the Constitution yet. If you want to do that, you have to spend the time, the money, and you have to be willing to go to jail to challenge it at the High Court. And there's only 7 High Court judges in the whole country. There should be 700 reviewing every single law automatically that gets written by any politician, but that's not how it works. Politicians just invent laws and then they're legal instantly without being reviewed by a higher body, which is really strange. But look, if the guys are successful today, that is the White Australia Party, the guys who are representing that argument, if their lawyers are successful, it will at least create a situation where they can't just be thrown in jail because they were the leaders of this prohibited hate group. Because right now, as it stands, the legislation is so egregious. Even if the group is technically disbanded, it can still be argued by the police, by the government, that behind the scenes, these guys are still running a little enterprise. They still support this prohibited hate group somehow. And then the onus is going to be on them to prove to the court that's not true, but they're going to have to do it from inside prison. So they can just be thrown in jail right now. So that's what they're trying to save themselves from today. They should be successful. It might take the High Court more than a day to make the decision, although in my opinion, it's a pretty clear, clean, easy to interpret case. It's pretty clear cut. The guys who are advocates for White Australia, who are taking this to the High Court, the law does back them technically. But the situation in Australia is one where lobby groups and people in politics are able to put a lot of pressure on process, and they're able to, you know, manipulate due process through their own personal satisfaction. And I believe that members of Labor Party who are behind this law, lobby groups that have pushed the Labor Party to introduce these laws, they are confident that they can pressure the High Court to rule in their favour. If they weren't confident that they could do that, I don't think they would have put the laws into practice in the first place. So, again, to summarise, objectively speaking, the law should actually favour the White Australia Party. That is the constitutional law. But the Labor Party, the existing government, they're pretty confident that they can spin it in such a way where the High Court will support them. It's going to be 50-50. I'm not really sure which way it's going to go, but it's pretty serious stuff.
Now, the other problem that you guys seem to have at the moment is in the wake of the Bondi attack, which I've covered extensively on this channel, the Zionist power structure has seized upon that and used it to pass new laws. And these new laws essentially take away many of the rights that protect normal Australians, such as due process, such as the need for arrest warrants, such as the need for warrants to enter properties. It essentially allows police, when they designate individuals as a threat to national security, to enter their premises, scoop them up, take them away, and interview them without a judge having agreed to that action beforehand. And what makes this worse is if you are arrested in that kind of raid, you are not allowed to stay silent and you are not allowed to knowingly give false information. So you can't invoke a right to silence. And if you do, that in itself is now a criminal offence. So that, along with a raft of other legislation, means that essentially when people like Joel are jailed, they have no rights at all. I mean, I read today on one site that was covering this that when Joel was jailed, he wasn't even allowed a Bible in his jail cell. It was that strict. He was allowed literally nothing, just solitary, not even a Bible to read, which is really unthinkable. So if the guys were put in jail, it would actually be very, very difficult for any of them to fight this case effectively from behind bars.
Yes. What this legislation does, in essence, it's 144 pages long, this hate crime legislation, which was drafted up very quickly after an Islamic terror attack. In my opinion, a lot of it was pre-drafted. And this is the way legislation seems to be introduced in the current political climate in Australia right now. There's a lot of pre-drafted works that are waiting for the right incident to occur, which kind of get worked quickly around that incident and then introduced as a consequence of the incident. So basically what I'm saying is the government has a plan for how it's going to expand its power and reduce the rights of ordinary citizens in a dramatic way. And they've already got the legislation set up. They're just waiting for the right incident so they can bring it in. They thought this Islamic terror attack was the perfect excuse to bring in hate crime legislation, which doesn't even mention radical Islam, which is interesting. But everyone knows that now. Like, that's kind of been blown open. But look, what this legislation does, as I was saying, it puts dissidents and regular Australian citizens who have opinions at war with cops. That's what it does. It creates violence between Australian citizens and police. It's just going to end up, it's going to create carnage, because when you don't have any rights and you've just got cops kicking your door in and arresting you because you have an opinion, you haven't hurt anyone, you haven't committed any crimes, not technically or in a broad sense. When there's no longer a vehicle for you to communicate with like-minded people, when you can't even go to the gym with like-minded people, because this legislation, they have studied what the NSN were doing. If you don't know who the NSN are, if you're kind of just tuning into this and this is all new to you, yeah, I'd be surprised. But the NSN were the activist group that ended up branching out and creating a political party called the White Australia Party. Right, so the National Socialist Network, they started doing all this activism. They did years of work to generate controversy. They did protests. They got enough members to start a political party. So then they launched the party. The government comes down and bans them with this legislation. Right. So, look, even a legal expert, a constitutional legal expert, said the same thing. Her name's Anne something. She said that this legislation will inevitably lead to violence, because it doesn't give people a vehicle to express themselves. And what I was saying before, lost my train of thought, it's early here. What I was saying is it's like the government introducing this legislation and kind of doctoring it before they passed it. They studied exactly what the NSN was doing in order to recruit, and what they were doing on a weekly basis with events such as jogging and boxing together in parks, having barbecues together, social events, in order to create a community-like structure of like-minded people to grow their membership base. Very basic stuff when it comes to political groups in Australia. But even tenets of what the NSN were doing, such as training in parks or socialising together at barbecues, that all technically violates the legislation. It specifically says group training, providing training. So if I, as a personal trainer, catch up with a group of these guys now, and I provide personal training to them in a gym environment, I'm also in breach of the legislation and I can go to jail for 15 years, right? So You can't even go to the gym together. You can't even catch up with like-minded people to have a barbecue. When you can't literally do anything to connect with, communicate with, or express your opinions politically, where does that lead? It's really not hard to understand. Like I said, that's not just my opinion. A legal expert, constitutional legal expert, actually said the same thing about 4 or 5 months ago when the legislation was first passed. So puts people at war with police. That's what it does. And cops aren't going to see it that way, obviously. They're going to be briefed by political activists before they go in to, arrest someone because they have an opinion. And it's going to end in tears. It's not going to end well long term. My hope is that the High Court does allow the White Australia Party to remain a political party, and there remains a non-violent legal political process for people who believe in Australian nationalism or even national socialism to participate in politics legally, to contest elections legally, because so long as that vehicle remains, that avenue remains, then there's always hope. There's a big avenue of hope for people of that political persuasion. And that's what the NSN were. They weren't a hate group. They were a hope group. They were operating on the hope that they could do that. That hope has now been removed. It's been shrunk down into a small hope. There still remains one shred of hope that the High Court may allow that avenue to exist. But if all that hope is gone, then all that will be left is hate. The government will have, through its own legislation, manufactured a hate group, which will be at war with police in perpetually into the future. So what's really ironic is the government is creating a situation which is going to lead to the political violence that it is claiming it's trying to stop with that legislation. The legislation literally creates the problem they're saying they're trying to stop, which is, it's twisted stuff. But I do think it's deliberate too. I do think there's certain people in government who want nationalists in Australia or national socialists even, who want to leave them with no choice but violence to express themselves. Because like, how else can you look at this situation? Like it's pretty obvious that when you take away everybody's rights and you leave them with no other option, there's really no other outcome logically.
So, from what you're saying, we're facing really an unprecedented challenge here. And that unprecedented challenge is based around the fact the government are setting up almost a kind of undefeatable piece of legislation where if one person is in the NSN or White Australia and they then outlaw that group, if that person tries to work with others, provides a network, whether it be social, whether it be educational, whether it be a network for physical training, it's almost like a form of contamination. So to escape being contaminated, the people who were in White Australia have to almost be completely politically quarantined. So if I'm
Correct.
getting this right, by being involved in White Australia, and obviously everyone had to sign up to be involved in White Australia. Have the signatures been handed to the government yet?
Yes, all the paperwork had been submitted. Because the what's his name? We have a foreign minister who's a champion of this whole process. That is the banning of Tony Burke. Because Tony Burke banned the White Australia Party suddenly and unexpectedly, quite recently, an opportunity was given to people, a very small window, to actually resign from the White Australia Party as a member. But a lot of people wouldn't have even got the chance to do that. But it helps. I believe it'll help the former leaders of White Australia in their legal battle in the High Court to demonstrate, if anyone did leave the party at the last minute sort of thing, to demonstrate that they were doing so because they were being intimidated by the government. They wanted to join a legal political party. They wanted to register this new party. They were intimidated. They weren't allowed to join. But yeah, the members were legit. Everything was legit. The paperwork was sent off. But interestingly, as soon as that was actually done, like I believe the same day that the paperwork was received by the Electoral Commission, that's the day I believe an intelligence agency notified the government that they needed to ban this group, and that's when it started to happen. So look, it's not even it, look, it's not about NSM. That's the thing. The legislation, I don't believe, the ban itself doesn't actually mention National Socialist Network specifically. It says White Australia Party. And I think the reason for that, because you were saying you were confused about why they would ban the party rather than the group. The official political community in Australia, that is Australian parliamentary politicians, they're not very remarkable. Okay, and there's not very many of them. This is a very small and unremarkable community, but it's very well gatekept for that reason. They don't want anyone with a big personality, with a lot of influence, to step into that community and take over it, because it's an environment where that could very easily happen. And so the Australian political community, small and unremarkable as it is very strongly protected by security intelligence forces, I think. They don't want anyone coming in and stealing the show. That happened in recent history with a party called One Nation, Pauline Hanson's One Nation. And Pauline Hanson proved that you don't even need to be particularly special or intelligent to step in and steal the show. You really just need to be a working class representative, truly a working class representative. You need to just step in there and say what everyone's thinking, and you can take over Australia's political process basically and become a very powerful, you put yourself in a very powerful position very quickly. And I think they are, here's the thing. I didn't think White Australia was going to go in and win the whole show in one go. I didn't think that was going to happen, because not enough people know they exist yet. It was going to take time. But there was a lot of potential for White Australia, in my opinion, if it was going to be registered as a political party and contest elections, contest seats. There was a lot of potential for it to become like a right-wing Greens. The Greens is like a far-left registered party in Australia, poses as environmentalists, but really they're just basically communists. But there's no real parallel on the right wing in Australian politics to the Greens. There's actually no real right-wing party at all in Australian politics. One Nation has become kind of like milquetoast conservative. Like they lean right, but only slightly, realistically. Everything else is just like hard left or corporatism, meaning they've got corporate lobby groups that want more immigration because feeds the big business sector and enriches the private sector. So there's no real right-wing pushback against that. There's a huge space for it, meaning the Australian people are really looking for a true right-wing option to vote for. The guys at White Australia Party knew that, but the people in the political community and Australia's intelligence community also know that. And they know that you don't even have to be that clean cut. You don't have to be that smart. You just need to be there to receive all those votes from all these frustrated working class people, and you could become very powerful very quickly. And so the ban of the White Australia Party is to prevent that power going to somebody like Tom Sewell. People in politics right now, they don't want someone like Tom Sewell in parliament with a lot of political sway, because the potential for that to happen was real. It was there. It doesn't matter if you like Tom Sewell or not. It doesn't matter if you think Tom Sewell would be a good politician or not. Australia's political sector, as I said, is so small and unremarkable. Someone like Tom Sewell could step in and steal the show pretty quickly. And so they're trying to gatekeep it. That's what this is about.
What I was going to say, though, and I find this sort of the most sort of damaging thing about this is the state now has the names of everybody that signed up for White Australia, and by enacting the legislation that they're attempting to enact and going for this ban, my concern is what they're going to say is everybody on that list is essentially politically toxic, And because they're politically toxic, if they involve themselves with any group, they will pass on said toxicity to others. And that leaves us in a really weird situation, one which prevents anybody who ever signed up from White Australia for ever really being involved in politics again in any meaningful sense. I mean, obviously, they'd be able to vote. They might be able to push out a few leaflets or do something like that. But this could be really, really disastrous. Because if
that's what you're saying, too, are right about
how many people? How many people have signed up to White Australia? How many names were on the list?
Official membership, I believe, was just over 1,800. But there were about close to 5,000 overall signed on supporters because they had different ranks of membership. You could be a signed on member of the White Australia Party. This is prior to the ban, of course. They've been disbanded now in response to the legislation, but over 1,800 signed on party members and about 5,000 signed on supporters. So if you weren't fully prepared to give all of your information to the Electoral Commission, because in order to be a registered political party, you need, I think, minimum 1,500 members, and they all need to provide names, phone numbers, addresses, because the Electoral Commission needs to be able to verify that they're real people and you're not committing fraud. But because of the situation in this country, many people believe that their personal information will be sent by the Electoral Commission straight to the government or to intelligence agencies or even to police. And they didn't really feel comfortable providing that information yet, and so they just signed on as supporters, so their information wasn't given to the Electoral Commission at this stage. But still, 1,800 people were willing to just give their information because they wanted to join the party and they wanted it to exist. You are right, though. If any of these former members of White Australia Party, former leaders, if they're known, if they go and now join another group or if they try to form another group, even if it's not on the basis of the same ideology, the government can just say they are phoenixing. That's how Foreign Minister Tony Burke puts it, meaning they're just changing their name and they're the same people. They believe the same things, but they're just changing their name. So bang, 15 years in jail for coming together as a prohibited hate group. They can just do that too. So it permanently taints up to 5,000 people perpetually, which it's just crazy stuff. Like, there's never been anything like this that's happened in Australia's history.
No, but that's what I mean. So it creates like, so it'd be like saying, you know, you've got 1,000 people, and those 1,000 people are all hardcore nationalists. They're the people that could effectively create change by forming the nexus of a political party. Now, to be a successful political party, you need far more than 1,000 people. But the way parties are structured is like a pyramid. The widest base is those who are willing to vote. The next widest base is those who are willing to support in some way. The next widest base or the next widest tier is the members. The next widest tier is the activists. Then at the top, you have, you know, the apex of the pyramid, which is the leaders and eventually the ultimate leader. But to run a political party, whereas you do need probably tens of thousands of members for it to be a success, the hardcore activist base, the leadership and the organizers always runs in the number of hundreds to small thousands, you know, the people who are willing to travel all over the country, the people who are willing to come to conferences, the people who are willing to put their name forward and start a branch or a group and be candidates, they number in the hundreds to the low thousands. They don't number in the tens of thousands like your membership. So if you were to take that most active 1,000 people from any political party, like, I don't know, say Tony Burke's political party, I don't know what that's actually called, but say you were to take the top 1,000 people in that party and say, you are banned from ever being involved in politics again. You are toxic. No one must come near you. Tony Burke's political party would be dead overnight because you're chopping off the head and the rest collapses. And I see this as a very, very nasty and underhanded way of chopping off the head of the entire nationalist movement, because these are the kind of people that would go to March for Australia. They are the kind of people who'd go out and demonstrate. They're the kind of people who would donate, would organise, that would share lifts. This would have a generationally disastrous effect at a crucial time in Australian history that could essentially help the enemies of the white man push Australia into a position where white Australians are a minority, because the people who are most likely to push back against it are all barred from participating in politics. This is, if I'm reading this right, this is the most undemocratic and scandalous thing that could possibly happen.
There's nothing like it across the rest of the world. There's nothing like it. No government, no matter how corrupt, no matter how lobbied it is by special interest groups who want to replace the population with migrants, no other government in the West has tried anything close to this. This is the worst shit. I didn't think it would be this bad. If anyone, Nick Fuentes said, oh, I predicted this, I told you so. He didn't actually predict it. Nick just said that the National Socialist Network, it'll never be popular. No one will ever support that. It looks stupid, rah, rah, rah. If anyone predicted it, it was me, because I said on the streams with Joel, back when Joel was allowed to be on the internet, he's not allowed anymore. Joel was of the opinion that the political party would need to be allowed on the basis of the 1951 legal precedent with the Communist Party. Not, you know, the government wasn't allowed to ban them. I said, it's my opinion, they'll just create a law specifically to ban you from going into parliament. That's what I said. And Joel goes, well, if they do that, we'll just take them to the High Court. I said, I think that will happen. That was my opinion. It was a cynical prediction. I didn't want it to happen. And I'm disappointed that it did happen. But it has happened. And on the subject of Nick Fuentes, by the way, I don't think I've seen anyone happier. I don't think I've seen anyone react with more glee and excitement at this happening than Nick Fuentes. I don't think anyone in the Australian government, no one in the Jewish lobby groups who push for these laws, who push for the ban of white Australia, none of them seem to be as happy or as thrilled by it as Nick Fuentes was in a recent stream after he was given $20 super chat to make a comment about it. So I think Nick's pretty funny. I think he's entertaining. But I think you're a fool if you trust him. And I think you're a fool if you give him a dollar. You can never trust anyone who is that happy and that excited at the prospects of people on the right wing going to jail, even if they are national socialists, even if they are a little bit too radical or extreme for your tastes. If people are going to jail for ideological reasons, don't trust the guy who's happy about it. Don't trust the guy who's celebrating it, obviously. So, yeah, watch Nick for a laugh, but don't trust that motherfucker. That's my opinion.
Look, I've got to say this. I've stuck up for Nick Fuentes on multiple occasions, something that has probably lost me far more viewers than it's gained me. I specifically praised him on two occasions, once for his documentary with Louis Theroux, which he handled very well, and once for his debate with Piers Morgan, which he did extremely well on. However, post this praising of Jeffrey Epstein and wearing Jeffrey Epstein memorabilia, I was disgusted by that, because I can't see how we are laughing about white girls being exploited by Israeli assets in order, you know, it'd be bad enough if the girls were just being exploited, but they're being exploited so that Israel can have even more control over the Western world, you know, which is the one thing he doesn't or purports not to want. Apparently he doesn't want that. He wants America first, not Israel first. So that's the first thing that really gets to me. But this laughing at Joel Davis, I don't really understand this, because whatever you think of Joel, and whether you think, you know, he's an edgy egotist, whether you think he's a brilliant mind, whether you think he's a guy that you would follow or a guy that you think you should avoid because of some of the crazier things he posts, he clearly isn't a state asset, because state assets don't get treated as Joel Davis has been treated, which means at that point, you should extend at least some duty of care and compassion to him as a fellow radical who is an enemy of the state. And this is something I don't understand in the UK. So today there was a Palestinian doctor called Dr. Rama Aladwan. She was in front of a medical tribunal today for using the term Jewish supremacy. And I posted something up that was written by Sasha Rossmuller about this. He posted something up saying good luck today, and I reposted it. And people were saying, oh, well, who cares? Who cares if this happens to her? Well, clearly she's outside of the system, and clearly the system are being extremely unfair to her. And when you're in a position where you are an enemy of the state, wishing ill on other people who are being persecuted for speech crimes because the state hates them, whether you agree with them 100% or 0%, they are on the other, they are on, in many ways, the same side as you, i.e. they're on the outside of the state throwing rocks in and are thus being attacked. You don't want these people to succumb to draconian restrictions, because eventually the draconian restrictions will be used on you. If they can put Joel in jail and deny him a Bible and not let him out of his cell for 4 months in a row, not let him have any yard time, they can do that for you. Equally, if they take this Palestinian doctor and sack her for you for a tweet, that will be precedent that will go against you when you're at your employment tribunal for something you tweeted. I find it unthinkable and utterly ridiculous that anybody would cheer on the state and wish for the state to be able to do things like this to any radical, let alone someone like Joel, who clearly, whether you disagree with his edginess at times or not, and I've had disagreements with him on stream, clearly he is a nationalist and clearly he is not working for the enemy. And I don't understand people's glee at this kind of thing. It disgusts me. And I personally, I don't think I would ever be able to, you know, support Nick Fuentes in what he does after his treatment of people like Joel. Now, it's one thing turning around and saying, you know what? Okay, I warned you, Joel. I said you were going too far. I wish you all the best, but I also wish you'd listen to me. You can say that in sort of a fatherly or friendly way. But this kind of rocking back and forward with an insane grin on your face, smiling because a fellow political dissident is, you know, in the gulag, I don't understand it. It sickens me.
There's a feminine pettiness to it that's the most concerning. Even if we're not talking about politics, if there's one thing I've discovered, because Nick in his stream talked about people who have been around for a while, listening to people who have been around. Well, I've been around. I've been in this activism for 11 or 12 years. I've been to jail when I was younger. If there's one type of person you cannot trust and should not work with, it's the person who celebrates other people going to jail. It's the person who is gleefully excited about the state throwing people in the can, usually for speech crime, you know, whatever it's actually for. Like, you might think, oh, well, I wish the government would put Antifa in prison. Well, maybe for conduct, but I wouldn't support that on ideological grounds. I wouldn't support anyone going to jail for ideological reasons, only for conduct, right? So they're committing the crime, whatever. But I've said enough on the subject. I think it was really disappointing. I don't know what he was hoping to gain from that. I don't know why he thought that was a good idea. Maybe he didn't think much about it at all. As I said, I think it actually underpins a feminine pettiness that is something you want to avoid in your life, not just in politics, but in your life.
No, he is feminine. He is feminine. He's a weird little... Look, the guy is a weird little virgin, and he has lots of feminine attributes. I mean, I saw him the other day boasting about eating a child's Happy Meal. I mean, if you're a fully grown man and you're satisfied by a child's Happy Meal, there's some serious deficiency there, you know.
I don't know. I don't want to get too much into. I don't want to be petty myself. Like, I don't. Like, I've seen him. What did he do? Someone went to his house and, you know, tried to humiliate him. Some, like, Jewish woman, I think. And yeah. the way he responded was cool, you know. So like I'm not actually against the guy. I'm not just trying to cover my tracks here because I'm afraid of his reach or something. I don't care about that. I think he's got some value, and that's why I'm so disappointed. That's why I'm so disappointed by his reaction. I'm like, because he either doesn't know the full story or he doesn't care enough to read into it, because he's got that America's the center of the world, why would I even care about Australia, man? You know, he might have that thing going on, but these
guys... he knows. He's one of these people that when he has some kind of fallout with someone, he holds on to that, then revels in their downfall, you know.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And it is a female sort of trait for someone to do that. And look, even if he was reveling in Joel's downfall, you know, a mature person would probably choose to keep that sort of behind closed doors, would choose to say, well, you know, probably don't say this publicly because it makes me look like a bit of a tit. But he doesn't have that filter, and he's very popular with other people like that who have that kind of mentality. You know, he reaches such a wide audience because there are so many young men today who sort of scorn masculinity and do have those feminine traits. He's the king of that type of young man, you know. That's why he's so popular, and he is good at what he does in terms of presentation. He's funny, he's quick, he's good at debate, but he does have these negative things. And like, I know Joel, I've met Joel, and when you read what he's been through, this wasn't like a fine or a, you know, slap on the wrist. This wasn't, you know, like they made Joel go out and do hard labor for 3 weekends in a row, you know, shoveling tar or something like that. What he went through is probably, you know, analogous to genuinely being in a gulag. When you're in jail for sort of 4 to 5 months without even being allowed any yard time or a single book to read, that's torture. Like if you said to me tomorrow, look, Mark, you're not allowed to go out, but we're going to give you any literature you want, I'd be like, well, I'm not very happy about this, but give me the complete, you know, Warhammer 40K lore dump. And I'd probably sit back and be like, well, it's 50 press-ups, then another chapter, 50 press-ups and then another chapter. But if you were just staring at 4 blank walls and all you had was the 50 press-ups and your own thoughts, I'm not sure how long it would be before you went insane. And one thing that does shock me is that there isn't any form of human rights legislation in Australia that protects Australian citizens from this kind of tyranny, because we are bound under the European human, you know, under the European Courts of Human Rights. And for all the ills of that institution and all of the terrible things they protect, like the right to seek asylum, I think that would be a way that you could sue the British government if they did that to you.
You know, there's a certain cowardice in it too, punching right, because it's safe to do it. You know, it's a faction of people that don't have a lot of, they don't have a defense league waiting to sue anyone who has a crack at them. So it's a safe thing to do as well. But I used to support, like, I was pretty much in agreement with Nick about 4 years ago. I didn't think National Socialism would fly publicly. And I thought it was a mistake to use that in public activism to show any sort of appreciation for Hitler, to copy-paste German National Socialists' demeanor. I thought that was stupid. But it started to bear fruit in a strange way. Basically, what I started realizing in Australia is if you look cool, if you look good enough, you can get away with anything. You can pull anything off if you look good enough doing it. And look, the guys didn't always look cool, but sometimes they looked really cool, especially in the last 12 months or so. They were really bearing some fruit there. And I recognized that a few years ago. I thought, you know what? There might be something to this. I'll give this the benefit of the doubt. I'll at least be passive or passive friendly to them, and I'll see what they can accomplish, because this is really interesting. They weren't just your standard, you know, caricature, ugly skinhead neo-Nazi that Hollywood's trying to put out there. They were something different. They were something that were, these guys were fit. Their members were mechanical engineers and race car drivers and chiropractors. These people were intelligent, professional guys. A lot of them had been to university, and they also took very good care of themselves physically. So this was a whole new thing that was happening with this NSN White Australia Party thing. I thought, wow, this, maybe I was wrong about this. So when you're here on the ground and you're seeing the way it played out, you know, it all seems very different to, I think, the way Nick's viewing it. And also, what's this thing? I've got to ask the question, why is everyone so, they're dressing in black? They're dressing all in black. How terrible. I mean, you know, they were doing Nazi salutes before it was illegal. They were using pretty obscene language. They were really pushing boundaries ideologically. But the thing that everyone keeps mentioning is they're wearing black clothes. How horrible. How dare they? It's like, what? Why does that matter if they're dressing in black? Well, because it's reminiscent of the British Union of Fascists and Osmond Mosley. Is that so terrible? Why does it matter that you're dressing all in black? Why is that? I don't know why everybody gets hung up on that.
I think it's the way political uniform has essentially been demonized, isn't it? You know, the use of political uniform now is this huge taboo. And I'm not sure people get hung up on it. I'm sure it's more to do with the way the media talks about it, because the media becomes so sort of obsessive over these things that the media whips themselves up into a frenzy. The way I would describe a group like the NSN, from watching the sort of the Winter Nationals and the Summer Nationals, I would probably describe them with the term polarizing. So when you saw them walking down the street, everyone gave a reaction. Now, some of those reactions were incredibly positive. Some of those reactions were people cheering, running over, girls, you know, waving wildly as if it was a pop star going by. But some of those reactions were also incredibly negative. You know, people going berserk, people having sort of little meltdowns. And I think that's the issue, isn't it? It was a polarizing.
That was the point, you see.
Yeah, because a strong reaction, a strong visceral reaction is much better than apathy. You know, I can't remember who said it, but somebody said something like, I'd rather people either loved me or hated me, but I want that strong reaction. What I don't want is people to walk by and never look in my direction. And that's sort of a marketing tactic, because if you've got a product and it's the best product in the world, but it's sat on the shelf and everyone walks by it because its packaging is terrible, its marketing's terrible, that's worse than being sort of a Marmite product where everyone knows it and either hates it or loves it, because a strong reaction. And even if you hate something, you talk about it. It's on your mind. It's an emotional response. Whereas indifference and apathy, that's the worst thing.
Well, when you have all the details like I do, because a number of these guys, the former leading elements of White Australia Party, NSN, a number of them are personal friends of mine. They were guys who stood by me and supported me when I was at the height of my activism all the way back in 2015, 2016. So I've got some strong friendships, some old colleagues who are at the helm of this whole thing. And so I've been in the loop. I know what was happening here. And for the government to come down on them right when they were registering a political party, and in the last 12 to 18 months, these guys actually attracted some pretty serious financial backers that could have really and were willing to really help them in the sphere of politics. When you put all the pieces together, you can't deny the impact these guys could potentially have had on Australian political discourse was so massive. They had the potential to win a lot of seats and influence Australian politics in a big way. And that's what it's all about. You can't really deny that either when you see that the government actually had to take an opportunity as terrible as an Islamic terror attack to draft up a whole new threshold of crime called hate crime, which is almost like pre-crime, because you can be banned from society, basically, and thrown in jail just for communicating with other like-minded people without having actually committed a crime yet, on the basis that you might do something violent because your ideology is hateful. When the government felt forced to do that just to stop White Australia Party from being registered, just to stop the NSN's activism, you can probably say they were onto something. you can argue they were definitely onto something there. It's hard to deny that, actually. So
you see, I see it slightly differently. I'm not sure whether the NSN would have actually achieved anything in terms of political power, but I think the importance of groups like the NSN is they act as an anchor point that drags things to the right. And the left have had similar anchor points. So the far left have never achieved anything politically, but by taking the stances they have publicly, they have dragged the discourse so far to the left that the mainstream leftist parties are now at a position where the radical leftist parties were 20 or 30 years ago. So the Labour Party today is where the most radical communists were 30 years ago. And I think what the NSN could have successfully done is played that role for the quote unquote right in Australia, dragging it to a point where an increasingly radical set of talking points were more acceptable, more popular. And then you force parties that are already on the ballot to discuss your points of view. You force them to adopt your talking points. And as time goes by, it then becomes almost inevitable that some of what you want, maybe not all of what you want, but some of what you want comes to pass. And we've seen a little bit of this in Britain. So when Nigel Farage came back to parliamentary politics, it was at an unfortunate time. And it was unfortunate because myself and a coalition of people had come up with a plan to fight elections on a specific ticket. We actually had leaflets prepared, which we'd put up online, that said, stop the boats, deport all illegal migrants. Nigel Farage came back, and one of the first slogans he used was, stop the boats, deport all illegal migrants. At which point we sort of went, oh gosh, that's it. You know, we're not doing anything now. We're going to get like 0.5% and he's going to get all the votes. But it did help move that needle. And I think what Tom would have done is been this powerful anchor. Whereas generally speaking, there hasn't been a powerful anchor on the right. And that's why the right has always drifted left, where there has been a powerful anchor on the left, which is why the left and the entire political discourse has shifted in their direction post 1945. They've never cucked on anything. They've been totally unapologetic. Whereas unfortunately, most of the right's history in the West has been one of aggressively cucking, giving up on ideals and trying to please people who would never vote for them. And I think Tom had it right because he was opening up discussion that was previously locked off. And I think that would have been so important. You know, and I'm not saying it would have caused Pauline Hanson to sort of come good overnight or anything like that, but I do think it would have caused people, you know, around her and potentially people even in Parliament to consider alternative views. And I think those alternative views could then eventually influence policymaking.
Yeah, absolutely. That impact, I believe it was having that impact too, but it was a multifaceted approach. It was pretty sophisticated, you see. I mean, the guys, this is the thing about NSN, White Australia, it's not as sophisticated as it seems from the outset, right? Like these guys, they're smart. A lot of them are philosophers. A lot of them are planners, but most of them are just regular people. And there was internal problems like there is with anything. But it was probably the most sophisticated right-wing approach that was taking place in Australia by far. Like, it was the most active, it was the most aggressive. Yes, there was problems, but there always will be in any human endeavour. But if you could imagine they get a White Australia Party into Parliament, which kind of acts like a far-right anchor inside Parliament itself, in addition to the activism still taking place on the outside of Parliament, then you've got kind of a parallel to the far left system, who in Australia have the Greens Party and their own sort of, you know, far left activists in the form of anti-fascism or something else. So it was kind of like emulating the left wing's model for the right wing, which the Labor government is trying to say, no, you're not allowed to do that. The left wing can keep doing it. They can do it to their heart's content. But the guys on the right, no, that's illegal. You're a hate group. Jail for 15 years. Hopefully, like I said, though, the High Court rules against that. And we can still, those of us who are on the right wing in whatever shape or form, there's still free political communication for us in the future. Because if this High Court thing doesn't work, who decides whether you're a Nazi? Who decides whether you're even an informal member of a banned Nazi group? It's not you who decides. It's not me who decides whether I'm doing that or whether that's what I am. Because I never declared myself a Nazi. Still to this day, I've never said I'm a neo-Nazi. I've never thought of myself that way. I've always been an Australian nationalist. That's how I thought of myself. But I've been characterized as a Nazi by journalists, by government officials. And so that's what I am when you Google my name. So what, the onus is on me to prove that's not what I am? I'm not explaining myself in consequence of their accusations. That's not what my whole political activity is going to become. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing, but I'm not a Nazi, right? But I'm not explaining that to anybody. The point is, they'll throw you in jail on the basis of you being a Nazi, being accused of being a Nazi, and then the onus will be on you to try to prove from inside jail to a judge that that's not what you are. Unless this High Court appeal goes through in favour of the White Australia Party, that's what the future of Australia will look like. I'll be right back. I've just got to take a 2-minute break. I'll be right back.
Well, while Joel's taking the break, while Blair's taking the break, my mind is obviously on Joel Davis. Whilst Blair is taking his break, I'm going to say, please, please do consider making a donation if you can. We've got a few in tonight. As I've said many times, and I'm going to keep saying this, Entropy's gone. It went earlier this month. I had a lot of subscribers on Entropy who were donating monthly sums. That made a huge difference to me. You know, we've got over 500 people watching tonight across Odyssey and Rumble. It's really good numbers. If you can, and you were a regular supporter, please go to Rumble and make a donation, or donate something via crypto, or go over to the Substack and make a recurring donation or gift somebody a donation. It all makes a difference. Obviously, a range of content creators who across the board have been negatively affected, and it really has hurt people's standard of living. And I'm sure it's going to force some people to stop doing what they're doing, because people simply won't be able to afford to keep working full time, producing the kind of content they are, which is terrible. You know, we are the most politically repressed group in the West, and we do rely on your help. Please do consider giving something if you can, and really, really help me if you value my work. So thank you in advance to all those that will help tonight. And thank you to all those who have already helped. I'm going to read out the donations, a few of those donations now. Point gave $25 and said donation. Thank you so much. Hazelnut 3000 gave $10 and said thank you both. Baldio7 gave $5. Thank you so much. And said, can you both please cover some book recommendations? I would appreciate it greatly. What are your book recommendations, my friend?
I'm currently reading a book called, it's by a bloke, Alex Hormozy. It's called $100 Million Offers. It's actually not really a political book, not at all. However, there's certain parallels between business marketing and political propaganda. So it's interesting because it's a book about how to make an appropriate offer in order to, you know, capitalize on a problem to make money. It's interesting. As I've gotten older, I've become more interested in making money. So I'm reading Hormozy. Obviously, like Robert Greene and the 48 Laws of Power is always a really good starting point for generating an understanding of how people approach politics and society these days. If you're into that kind of thing, it's more of a psychology or psychological read. But what do you think, Mark? Like, I'll take some time to think about it because lately I haven't been reading that many books. I read more when I was younger. Now that I'm almost 37 now, it's kind of weird to embrace that reality, but it's more difficult to intake new information when you get a bit older and you haven't read for a while. Are you still reading any books?
Well, I've got a couple of recommendations here. This is more of an ideological book. This is The Enemy of Europe by Francis Parker Yockey. This is really important because it's a little bit of a trailblazer. And what I mean by that is Yockey sort of posited that the Soviet Union would actually present in the long term less of a threat to the survival of European people than America, and that America's sort of liberalism would be far more cancerous than communism in the long term. Now, that was originally published in 1953, and anyone that's a fan of my work or watched my speech at American Renaissance last year will have seen that I said something a little bit similar to that. I said that the Judeo-American state is by far the greatest threat to white survival, more than China, more than Russia, more than any other country, because what it pushes is a series of very attractive poisons that people willingly ingest, become addicted to, and destroys them from within. And you know what Yockey said was, when the Cold War comes to an end, when this is all done and dusted, you will find out that America has been worse to you. And they were. You know, when the Berlin Wall came down, the people to the east of it, despite being brutalized, were still racially intact. Look at what happened on the western side of the Berlin Wall, where we embraced pornography, homosexuality, LGBT, race mixing, mass immigration, you name it, we embraced it. And we are the worse for it. So that's a really interesting book. And when you look at it from a historical perspective, it's definitely something that was ahead of its time. And the other book I would recommend, sorry, when I was looking to the side, it was because I was going through my bookshelf, getting a couple of my favorites out. And here's the other one, Legal Truth or Guilty, Diary of a Political Prisoner by Sam Melia. This is an excellent book. And I've got to say, if you're not a reader, which I'm not really. I do read books, obviously, for our book reviews and things, but I'm not like a guy that, digests books on an industrial level. Sam Melia's book is the most engaging read I have read in years in terms of a political yet non-political narrative, because it's not theory and ideology. It's
Did
his
Sam
time in jail.
Sam write that himself? That's a
Yeah, it's
self-published
his
book, isn't it?
diary from in jail. It's
Right.
amazing. I can't recommend this enough. This is brilliant. If I could say to like everybody, read one modern day nationalist book, this is it. It will make you laugh. It will have your heart in your mouth. You know, this guy's amazing. I'm proud to be able to say he's a friend, but go out and buy this. It's so good. And the other book I'm reading at the moment is you've met him. I've met him. He's an amazing guy, Sasha Rossmuller. He's written a book. It's not in front of me right now, but I'm currently reading it for our book club. We're going to be reviewing that later this month. Really good book, really
Is
nice guy. So
that
there's three
a new
recommendations.
is that a new book that he's recently published?
It is his new book. It's on my bedside cabinet, which is obviously another room. You
He
know,
sent me
this is.
a I got to read my He sent me a message. I haven't read it yet. It's probably in relation to that, so I'll check my
Yeah,
messages.
he sent me a copy. We're reviewing it at the end of this month. Sasha's a really nice guy, and he's the kind of guy that I can't really speak highly enough of him. His book's called Culture, Aesthetics, Identity. And he's a wonderful guy. He should be the Chancellor of Germany. He's one of these guys that I absolutely adore. His book's fantastic. And the fact he's German and he's managed to write it in English so we can all enjoy it, support him too. So there's three book recommendations that aren't going to get me any trouble. Last time everyone asked for a book recommendation, I said something and people made me regret it for the rest of my life. So there's three modern day book recommendations. And I'm not saying the thing I said last time because it'll get clipped out again. And yeah, If anyone wants me to, if anyone's expecting that, it's not happening. So.
Funny you mentioned Parker Yockey. When I was young, I read Imperium by Francis Parker Yockey, and it definitely contributed to the formulation of my understanding of world politics. Very smart guy. Kind of, there was a certain cynicism about the way he writes, which you will need to endure, in my opinion, because he's pretty, although it might seem cynical, it's probably more in line with, you know, reality of how things are. But he develops his own ways of understanding things. Basically, he's a philosopher in his own right. And I think Parker Yockey is definitely valuable. So I can definitely, yeah, I can agree with that recommendation.
Right, let's bring up the next super chat. Thank you for that. I'm Cheruska, gave $5. He said, powerful episode and powerful takes. Hail to both of you, Mark and Blair. Well, thank you so much for your continued support. X22 gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, Mark, you mentioned about whites clustering to a town like Grimsby. In an ideal world, what would an ethno town look like? What projects would be put forward? Would you ban alcohol, for example? Well, firstly, look, I'm not a fan of alcohol, but I'd never ban it. My problem with alcohol is people who come to political events get hammered and end up like brawling with each other or wetting themselves at the Tommy rally. You know, I've literally got one of my best friends went to one of these rallies. I've known him for years and he went to one of these rallies and he was trying to get a guy onto the underground in London. And the police were like, you've got to get him on the train. He's so drunk. At which point the guy started to urinate in his own trouser leg, and the police were like, you have to get out of here because otherwise we're going to arrest you. And he had to carry him all over London until they found a hotel, like one of these premier inns, that would accept him because of the urination issue. Now, I'm not being funny, but like, if you're going to a political event and you are going there to drink your weight in tinnies and then soil yourself publicly, that's not good. Now, obviously, if we have nice pubs and we go there and we have a beer in the beer garden as our kids are on, you know, on the bouncy castle on a Sunday afternoon, then we all have Sunday dinner together. That is the correct use of beer. You don't have to drink so much of it that you publicly wet yourself. And anyone can quote me on that. That is a quote. So if I was to take over an area, I would actually choose one of these white working class areas that was depressed, where the shops were getting boarded up, where everything was going for cheap, that where no one else wanted to go. And I'd say, come on, white man, let's take the Blairs, the Joels, the Marks, the Sams, the Sashas. Let's get us all there and let's take this once proud area. And when we get there, we'll open the shops, we'll open businesses, we'll make it great again. We'll all live together. We'll bring our families there. We'll take over the rundown school and start educating our children. We'll do up the community centre and we'll have, you know, a May Day celebration there. You know, we'll have a Christmas celebration. You know, one of our guys will, you know, put on the Santa Claus outfit for all the kids and give out presents at Christmas time. You know, we'll have an Easter egg hunt in the local park. You do these things. You take over an area that the government has discarded and said was too much of an effort to turn around. You would turn it around and make it into paradise, prove the most important point imaginable, that when white people come together and create an intentional community, they can go to an area that was perceivably an unrescuable hellhole and turn it into a paradise. You would make such a point doing that. That's how I would do it. If somebody said to me tomorrow, Mark, you're going to win the Euro Millions, you're going to have 120 million. I wouldn't spend it fighting elections. I'd spend it buying houses for white couples and building us a place that even if the country did go down, we would have a fortress where we could pull up that drawbridge and say, this is ours. What do you think, Blair? Would you know, I've always looked at Australia and I always wondered why Tom didn't do this, because you have these little towns in Australia that are basically abandoned. Couldn't you guys just all move to one of them and say, this is our place?
I think there's been a lot of effort to manifest that, actually, especially in the last year or so. I won't speak as to how much effort has been made on a live stream, but It's funny you mentioned that because that's always been at the center of a lot of the thinking amongst the guys in the right wing down here. And I think that's probably the reason we left the motherland in the first place. I think maybe the crown got to the point where it was like, oh, no one wanted to deal with the taxation or whatever the hell was going on. And so that's why some of the best Anglo blood gets on some boats and tries to find a new place to go, whether it's America or Australia. I think that's what prompts people to separate from the main contingent, the main nationhood, which just ends up becoming intolerable for some reason. And obviously there's great incentive to do that right now because the main nationhood in Australia is up for dispute. Is it Muslim? Is it Indian? Is it Asian? Or is it a combination of all of those things? A lot of people don't want to stick around to find out. That's understandable why.
Thank you. Olive Zoomer gave $20. Thank you so much. He says, have you seen the Greens, Lib Dems, and the Conservatives are all fielding candidates in the Makerfield election? Gives Restore a better chance if it splits the left wing a bit more. Look, I'm sorry, guys, but Restore aren't going to win that election. My concern is that Restore will split the vote further and Labour will win. Look, I don't want to get into this now because it annoys people when I say this, but just have a little bit of trust in me. I've been doing this for 26 years, okay? I have seen the way elections play out. Restore isn't about to jump ahead of reform. What's about to happen is the state are going to play those two parties off against each other to split the anti-immigration vote to try and get Andy Burnham in. That's the concern. You know, a lot of people, including Steve Laws, me and Steve Laws agree on this. Steve Laws has said, you know, this is a bad thing, Restore going up against. He's tweeted that out. So it's a bad thing, Restore going up against reform in Makerfield. We should have all got behind one candidate and just, you know, stopped Labour winning. I am really concerned that this is going to be set up so those two parties cancel each other out, and the quirk of the first past the post system will allow Labour in. From my perspective, the best thing about Makerfield is that both the Lib Dems and the Greens are standing. So, sort of the patriotic white working class vote will go in one direction, and the progressive liberal vote, there aren't really any ethnic minorities in Makerfield. It's something like 98% white and 95% white British. It's unbelievably white. I think the largest ethnic minority is listed as something like 0.7% Asian. So ethnic minorities aren't an issue there. I believe that this is a chance to humiliate the Labour Party. And that's what it has to be. I've put my line in the sand. I don't think Restore are ready to fight a parliamentary by-election, and I don't think we should be splitting the vote. I think our primary concern as nationalists is not outright victory, but the first issue must be destroying Labour and the Conservatives in their entirety. And once we've leveled the political playing field, the attempt then should be growing a base in Parliament to drag it to the right. But there will be no dragging it to the right until the two primary parties are dissolved and destroyed. I don't know if you've got any opinion on this by-election, Blair. Obviously, it's a bit of a British issue.
Yeah, I'm too Aussie for that, mate. But
Too Aussie. Okay.
I think reform, it looks promising from where I'm sitting, but you know more about this than I do.
Gothic Jacob gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, great stream. Blair, I missed the Joel and Blair show, tentatively named the Heavy Hitters. I always loved the Blair and Joel show. Do you know what the best thing about it was? It was
What's
on
that?
early in the morning and my time. So as I'd be sat down answering my emails, I could always just go grab my giant can of energy drink, answer those emails, listening to you guys sort of chew the fat about the big issues. And I always used to be in the chat, sort of tapping away to you both, giving like little bits of, you know, information and my take on things. I even sent a super chat once to Joel over on Odyssey. It was one of the few people, like, one of the few times I've ever super chat, and he never read it out, the bastard. But it was a great show. Would you ever consider doing that again if restrictions are dropped on him?
I don't know. He's doing fine, by the way, if anyone's concerned. How's Joel Davis going? He's just banned from the internet, basically. And he's doing a lot of reading. Oh, sorry, he's actually writing a book. I can tell you guys that. He's writing a book, and he's very serious about it. He's very excited about it. He's spoken to me about it at some length on the phone, and it sounds really interesting. He's a very smart guy, and he has a very sober-minded perspective on you know, geopolitics worldwide. And so he's piecing that together right now, the current situation. He's got a very good understanding of where we're going to go in the next few years. And I believe that book will probably be available in the next few months. He's not yet sure whether appearing on someone's stream or podcasts will breach his bail conditions. He needs to get advice in regards to that from lawyers and then from the police. So that's why he hasn't really appeared. It's my understanding that that's why he hasn't appeared on anyone's show or any interviews yet. There's plenty of people who want to interview him. But he's a father now, and the whole political climate situation in Australia has recently changed dramatically. So he's not in any rush to get himself into any trouble again. That's my feeling. So he's in a good position. He hasn't changed his whole view or philosophy. He hasn't flaked or anything like that. But he is really focused on writing this book. He's doing fine. Yeah, streaming with Joel was always interesting. I was very interested in Joel when I first met him because he was clearly, you know, different from most people. The way he spoke and the way he viewed things was really interesting to me. And I got to know Joel quite well personally and obviously spent a lot of time streaming with him. And I'm sure the police in Australia spent a lot of time watching those streams because he's got 20 charges in total, and many of them are in relation to comments that he's made on those streams. As you guys know, the role, if you did watch those streams, you would know this, Mark. I tried to play like almost like a mediating role. I tried to like play devil's advocate against Joel sometimes, tried to keep him on the straight and narrow, which was difficult to do, you know. So Joel would get carried away sometimes. You know, he would follow a certain thought. And, you know, a lot of the time I was thinking, oh, God, I don't know if he should have said that, you know. But, look, I don't think you should be able to be charged with criminal offences for opinions on Australia's demographic situation. And I think that's what the charges come down to. I don't think they're very fair. But a judge will determine whether that's the case further down the line for Joel. He'll be caught up with quite a few legal matters in the near future, though. So he's got a lot to think about in that regard. It's what happens in Australia too. Like, it's what happens when you're a dissident, when you have the opinions that challenge the government's major policies that are profiting the private sector. You know, the reason the private sector lobbies politics in the first place is because they can make a lot of money through mass immigration. And when you're criticizing that in a way that makes you controversial, popular, notorious, you end up with a stack of criminal charges. You end up busy for 2 to 3 years in the court system, and takes a lot of energy, takes a lot of money, takes a lot of time to unravel yourself from that hooked net of legal strife. And that's the process Joel's going through right now.
Yeah, I always used to like the way the show panned out. It was always like Joel was very eager and giddy and always had some sort of crazy new take. And you were sort of a little bit always like, come on, son, reel it in slightly. And it was a good dynamic. It was a good dynamic. You were sort of the old war horse and he was the sort of over-enthusiastic youngster. I remember I came on and had quite a good sort of debate with him about his rather crazy idea of the goon right, which was an entertaining show. Yeah, God. Yeah, I got some text messages after that one.
I got to say, though, like, even if you could describe it as over-enthusiastic, Joel's energy back then. But you can't lose that. You can't lose that in your politics, and you can't lose that that youthful energy inside yourself, which generates the passion and the hope that sort of drives you in politics a lot of the time. You can't become too cynical. Like, so even if the outcome appears to always be just more legal strife and more personal problems imposed on you by the state, if that seems to play out over and over again, it still doesn't matter. My advice to people generally is don't lose your passion. You know, don't be too scared to really give yourself to something and believe in something, because that's the kind of driving force that we need in politics. We don't need more cynics and more naysayers and more critics just sitting around saying that won't work, that's stupid. We need people who really believe, even if that belief doesn't lead anywhere good. Ultimately, it's a passion and energy that just like brings everything to life and provides hope for people.
I agree. And look, I didn't always agree with everything Joel did, but I always admired the way he had so much energy at all times and was always like a ball of ideas. And you need those. Politics needs live wires. It doesn't need people who lack that creative drive. And although I think Joel probably didn't use the best turn of phrase in the tweet in question, he in no way was threatening what she claimed he was threatening. And also, it was not something that constitutes a national security risk, which is what is claimed. They have thrown the book at him, not because of what he said, but because of who he is and what he stands for. Let's make that very clear. Ayn Cheruska gave $8. Thank you so much. And he says, all the best to you, Blair, and your Australian comrades. Struggle is the father of all things. Something which I agree with. Struggle is indeed the father of all things. I think without struggle, you become lazy and fat. I think all of this will either make us stronger and we'll come out the other side, or it'll break us and we'll fade away. But in my life, I've got to say, everything they've thrown at me over the last 26 years, all the pain and suffering I've endured, I'm still here smiling. I'm still here doing the show. If you can hand one thing to me, it's consistency and generally being a chirpy Brit.
Yeah, well,
do you agree about struggle? Are you a fan of struggle, Blair?
Of course. In this physical realm where we persist, we exist. If you don't suffer to some degree, then you just become soft. You become like a worm that just kind of consumes and excretes. You need to endure hardship to some degree to give yourselves a good reason to regenerate efficiently, especially to generate more muscle cells, thereby increasing your metabolic rate. If we're talking about individual organisms, this is the case. But what is true on an individual basis is also true for broader communities and, you know, nations, which are just, you know, larger expressions of our individual organic existence. What I'm saying is, if you're not under some sort of pressure, you get weak. It's true as an individual. If you're an individual, it's true. If you're a country, it's true of any living thing. That's why pleasure's in excess of its punishments. You sit there and do nothing for long enough, eating a lot of chips and ice cream, you're just punishing yourself. You're getting sicker, you're getting weaker, you're getting fatter, you're getting easier to control and manipulate. So you've got to get yourself out of that situation. You've got to take the steps necessary to induce a bit of suffering on yourself if it's not happening. But luckily for us, to look at the glass half full, politically and socially, we don't really need to do a lot to induce any suffering, because a lot is being done to put that pressure on us from an administrative level. And if we're going to survive, we're going to need to adapt. And so it's all very interesting to see how it's going to happen, how that adaption is going to play out.
Thank you. VK Gargoyle gave $5. Thank you so much. He said, thank you for your article on Henry Novak. Devastating and enraging. Poor boy, Henry. Thank you so much for that. And if you haven't checked it out, I do have a Substack. It is linked in both the Odyssey and the chat over on Rumble. And basically, those links will take you to my Substack where you can subscribe to my work. But the latest article is on the Polish boy who's been attacked, who who was attacked by a Sikh man, stabbed and died because the police, when they turned up at the scene of the crime, arrested the Polish boy, restrained him and handcuffed him on the say-so of the Sikh who had attacked him, because the Sikh said he'd been the victim of a racist attack. My article on this is the most extensive on the subject. Please check it out. Please share it. Please get it out everywhere. It's worth a read. Thank you so much for the super chat. We've got a weird super chat. Somehow a super chat has come through on Odyssey. How has that even happened? $5, it says. I didn't even know you could super chat through Odyssey anymore. It said, from Based and Butterfly Pilled, it said, your advice not to trust Nick Fuentes is well received, Blair. He's really shown his true colours lately with gloating over everything and refusing to support Chud the Builder. Real American nationalists like Devin Stack need to take charge. Yeah, I don't know if you know about the Chud the Builder case, but Nick Fuentes has apparently mocked him. He was out and he got attacked by a black man, and he had a weapon on him. He discharged his weapon and apparently killed the guy who was attacking him in self-defense. And Nick Fuentes has apparently attacked him as well, which is unfortunate.
I don't know the details on that. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah. So there you go. Baba 2 gave a very generous $50. Thank you so much. He said, the eyes of all your friends are on Australia tomorrow, wishing you success. Yeah, I really hope Tom manages to pull this off. Obviously, you know, my heart is with you guys. What do you think? When is the judgment going to come in? I mean, it's obviously, is it today in Australia or is it tomorrow in Australia? As in, you know, it's 7 p.m. here in the evening, but it's about four or five in the morning over in your time. Is it today your time when the judgment comes or tomorrow your time?
Today for us, tomorrow for you. Brilliant. 2 o'clock in the afternoon for us, so later today. Not sure if the judgment will be made immediately, though, because the legal system operates on its own time frame. It moves very slowly. So I think Justice Jaggett is the name of the High Court judge hearing this injunction application. As I said earlier in the stream, if it's successful, it will at least provide some temporary protection. So the government can't just throw people like Tom Sewell in jail whimsically because they were a leader of a prohibited hate group. It's going to put a pause on the whole process until that legislation used to ban White Australia Party is reviewed, weighed up against the Constitution to see if it's even constitutionally valid. Right. So today, there's the first hearing, the first step in the process for establishing continued free political communication is taking place in the High Court of Australia. Hopefully by the end of today, there's a positive result in reference to that, which at least provides some temporary protection until the constitutional validity of the hate crime laws is reviewed by the High Court. So all we can do is hope, you know, cross our fingers and hope, because that's what it's come down to. It's come down to just, we're just hoping, really I'm hoping, that the High Court operates objectively and can't be politically pressured by the powers that be right now. That's my hope.
Well, obviously, I wish you all the best. And if it's 2 p.m. your time, that's about 9 hours from now. So 9 hours from now here will be the early hours of the morning. So by the time I'm waking up at about 6 a.m., that should be when we'll have a judgment. So I'll keep my eyes peeled. So good stuff and all the best to Tom and the lads. British Gammon gave $30. Thank you so much. It's an interesting stream. Thanks, gents. Well, thank you so much for a generous super chat. Spethios gave $20. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, unsustainable immigration levels in Australia is highly illogical. The resulting strain on our resources is so severe, it should be viewed as a direct offence against our national heritage. Have you got the actual latest immigration figures in Australia? How bad is it? How quickly are you being replaced?
550,000 last year, I believe, in a single 12 months. More people have come in from India in the past 12 months, I believe, than any Italian or Greek immigrants in the history of Australia. So just think about that for a moment. in the history of our whole country, more immigrants from India have come in the last year than I think all of Italian or Greek immigrants in our history. So it's very serious. It's very serious. It's to the point where it's very reasonable to assume that this is actually part of a scheme to replace the existing or traditional Anglo-Australian working class with a more manageable, cost-effective slave class from India. It's reasonable to assume that. It will provide a new ethnic voting bloc to keep any multicultural party or party masquerading as the multicultural option in power indefinitely, because people who are coming into Australia as a result of that party's policies will vote for that party because that's the reason they're in Australia. So it's very easy to see what's happening. Like I said, there's no real strong right-wing option in the government to vote against these policies except One Nation. Don't know if One Nation's going to be strong enough on the issue, though. And a lot is being done to prevent a real right-wing option from coming forward officially. So it's very serious. The situation is very serious. It's, yes, our heritage is being erased. That's happening socially, politically, has been happening for a while. But we're also being ethnically replaced. It's not really something that can be argued at this point. It's just like the writing's on the wall. The government knows it and the people know it. That's why such drastic measures are being taken by the government to basically shut down dissent, organized political action against mass immigration. Even the term mass migration, the government's really trying to make that too taboo to say. They don't want people talking about it at all. But it's kind of too late. It's such a big subject matter. It's impossible for the government to just squash it unless they bring in the sort of hate crime laws that can land you in jail straight away for planning to do anything about it, which they have done. So, like, comes back to the same thing we're talking about, this high court battle to protect our rights to actually question government policy and organize against mass immigration. That needs to go through. That really needs to work out to our advantage.
Well, I've looked at the demography of Australia now, and Australia doesn't actually keep data on race or ethnicity. It allows people to register up to two ancestries. So you could say, my ancestry is English, it's Irish, or you could say, my ancestry is English and African, if you were saying mixed race, but it's not as specific as the British census. What is most concerning is this: there are 8.83 million foreign-born residents known to be living in Australia. According to data released by the Australian Bureau of Statistics, the ABS, this foreign-born population represents 32% of Australia's total population of 27.6 million. This marks the highest proportion of overseas-born residents recorded in the country since 1891. And for the first time ever, India has overtaken England as the primary country of birth for overseas-born Australian residents. So, with the top 10 being India, England, China, New Zealand, Philippines, Vietnam, South Africa, Nepal, Sri Lanka, and Malaysia, with a major shift. The key population trends are listed as a major shift towards Asian migration. And beyond first generation immigrants, Australia's diversity runs deep, with almost 48% of all Australians having at least one parent who was born overseas. So, what they're essentially saying is because you've got such a small population, just 27 million, and a third of them already are born overseas. Now, some of them may be white, like there's a lot of, English people who have moved there or work there. Potentially, because of your small population, you could be replaced in just a few generations because of the rate people are coming in.
Probably even sooner than that, because the rate at which people will come in will presumably increase so long as the current government is in power. And as I said, the people coming in will be keeping the current government in power. You've got Foreign Minister Tony Burke openly admitting that he wants everyone in Australia, whether they're citizens or not, to fully participate in Australia's democracy. That's what he said on an Indian podcast recently. That means he wants them all to vote. And he wants them all to vote because they're going to vote for him in his theory. And as I said, it's just importing an ethnic voting bloc, an overseas voting bloc, that will keep the Labor Party in Australia, the current leading federal party, in power perpetually, protected against popular opposition from the traditional Australian working class. It's pretty much common sense. I mean, why else would they be encouraging that kind of immigration? Unless it was profitable to the private sector and keeping them in power. It's pretty simple to understand. Like, the fact that these politicians for the Labor Party get on camera and say, it's all about being diverse, which makes us stronger, and we're so much culturally, more culturally enriched, and I just like seeing people happy. I just want to bring immigrants here because I love seeing the smiles on their dials, and that's what it's about for me. I mean, who believes that? It's like, it's ridiculous to think that these career politicians are actually motivated by just good guy feelings, you know, just, I just want to feel good about myself and be nice. That's what's motivating us here, guys. That's literally their explanation. So it's like, just, it's beyond comical at this point.
Thank you so much. Baba 2 gave another $50. Thank you so much for your generosity tonight. He said, the eyes of all your friends are on Australia tomorrow, wishing you great success. Well, thank you so much. Yogi Big House 76 gave $10. Thank you so much. He said, Blair, what do you think of Sam Bamford?
Sam Bamford. Jog my memory, Mark. Who was this?
Sam Bamford. Let me... I feel really bad now because...
No, the name, sure. Really, the name really rings a bell. Just trying to put a face to it because I've been introduced to and known so many people since I've been in politics.
Sam Bamford. I don't know. I actually don't know.
I know.
It's come up with somebody called Samuel Bamford, who was an English radical reformer and writer born in Middleton, Lancashire. He wrote on the subject of Northern English dialect and wrote some of his better known verse in it. But I'm sure that can't be the person they're talking about. I don't know who Sam Bamford is, so I apologise.
It's escaped my memory too, but the name really rings a bell. I've come across it many times. Feel free to get in the comments and jog my memory, guys.
Okay. Jack 1996-1 gave $10. Thank you so much. A question for Blair. Do you think they'll go after ex-supporters and ex-members if all of this goes south? Can the leadership stay out of jail even if they cease all actions?
100%. 100%. There is no staying out of jail for ex-members, even associates like myself. They are coming for everyone with this legislation. This can only result in jailing people of that certain political persuasion. And it will eventually extend to everyone who is active or popular in nationalism. Nationalism will just get banned in Australia. It will extend to everybody. 100%. There is no other outcome. It'll start with just the former leaders and all the major Nazi troublemakers. That'll be the foot in the door. And then it'll just be everyone downstream from that who they can accuse of being a Nazi or a racist. That's what they want. It's just the writing's on the wall. So there's no question about that. 100%. Everyone will go to jail. I've been saying that since December last year, since before this legislation even came in. I said they're trying to put us all in jail and they're very serious about it. Yeah.
The one thing that shocks me is in the UK, you can't sort of pass retrospective laws. You can't pass a law that kind of, you know, you can't say, right, the speed limit 70 miles an hour today. Tomorrow we're changing it to 50. And everyone who was zapped by the police scanner yesterday going 62 within the law is now being fined because we've changed things today. That would be seen as absolutely outrageous. And one of the things that does actually shock me is in the UK, when groups are outlawed, they usually give the group notice. So they say, we are putting it through court to, we're putting it through Parliament and we are seeking to outlaw the group. And the group has, it's announced that the group has until, let's just say for sake of argument, you know, it's May this month, has until June the 10th to disband and cease all operations when the ban officially comes into force. And this gives sort of, like, I don't know, 28 days grace or something to allow people to formally leave the group, for things like the website to be taken down, and for people to sort of quote unquote clean their house. And by clean their house, I mean, you know, they get to decide, well, I don't want to have this stuff in there anymore. I don't want to be part of this anymore. You know, I'm chucking everything away. It's all going in the bin tomorrow, being burnt. I'm, you know, wiping my hard drive, leaving all the groups on Telegram, deleting my Twitter. It gives you that time to sort everything out. The fact you guys aren't being given that is shocking. Has the government given any provision whatsoever for people to go?
No. No. Tony Burke, foreign minister, just gets on camera, says to the media, this group's now a hate crime, they're prohibited, they're banned. Anyone supporting this group, anyone going to events, hosting events, financial support, anyone training with them, providing training to them, you'll go to jail for up to 15 years. And then it's active as of that moment. I think he said as of midnight tonight. So you had about 6 or 7 hours after he made the announcement, not 28 days, about 6 or 7 hours until the legislation came into effect. But even if you put this legislation, like the hate crime laws, you put it into ChatGPT and you ask the AI system, does this law go too far? It will say, yes, definitely, because it criminalizes association rather than conduct and just avoids all due process. It's basically anti-democratic in essence. It's completely tyrannical. ChatGPT will say that. So I don't know what kind of argument. It's going to be really interesting to see how the government tries to uphold the legitimacy of this legislation in the High Court proceedings. I'm really interested to see how they do that. And whether they even like feel restrained by the High Court will be interesting, because each state seems to operate independently of the federal government in Australia, even though they're supposed to obey federal law. Every state does its own thing. So you might find that New South Wales starts throwing people in jail regardless of what the High Court says, and Victoria doesn't, or vice versa. Or one state might be free and the other's not. They're just doing things whimsically on the basis of the opinion of the state premier. So how this is going to pan out is really anyone's guess, but they definitely want to throw everyone in jail, everyone on right of centre.
Well, Flemish Fighter gave $20. Thank you so much. And this is a follow-up. And he said, thank you for the stream, Blair. Are there any plans to regroup within Australia, or is the no temporary escape plan? I think from what you said, there isn't an escape plan, is there?
Well, a temporary escape plan is to just not do anything political and not do any group activity and not support any group activity, lest you be thrown in jail, because that's what we're currently forced to do, I think. I mean, there's certain political groups that are still, I think, having meetings and stuff in Australia on the right, because they specifically have not been banned. So you can possibly go and join one of those groups or get involved in that kind of stuff. But if you've been formally associated with NSN or White Australia, they're not going to want to communicate with you for their own protection. So if you were associated with NSN or White Australia, you just sit individually on your own and do nothing. You just go to work, don't say anything, and don't attend any events of a political nature ever. That's currently the escape plan.
Yeah. And Snazzy Candidate gave $8 and said, hi, Blair and Mark. Both you and Joel are good men, as is the still young Nick Fuentes. What is seen as glee for other nationalists' failure is simply satisfaction that his political tactics, based on his analysis, are effective.
What political tactics? What, live streaming for some money? Is that a political tactic? I wouldn't call it that. What, self-preservation at all costs so you can keep live streaming to get some super chat money? I don't think... calling that a political tactic is interesting. It's a personal survival tactic, but it's not a political tactic, unless he goes into politics in the future, perhaps, which there's a lot of people saying he might do it. But I don't know why he feels the need to punch right while he's doing that.
That's an interesting question, though. Could a Nick Fuentes candidacy be effective? Because I'm not sure it would be. I'm not sure that him, with all the things he's said, I'm not sure he'd be any more effective than the likes of Joel or Tom in the political arena. You know, if he actually went down that political route and tried to stand for the Republicans. And it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because when one man says that they will be more successful, but hasn't put themselves up for the vote, it's yet unproved, isn't it? I'm not really sure how that would work out, especially with some of the things he said. Because although you could argue that Tom and Joel have been more openly, you know, quote unquote Nazi, Nick has also been more definitively anti-woman. I'm not sure that would work out well for him. You know, with some of the things he said about women, you know, 50% of the electorate are female. Would he perform better than Joel and Tom in a vote? We'll probably never know, because I'm not sure Nick will ever stand, and Joel and Tom will be denied the privilege of standing. So it leaves us in a weird situation where it's kind of a battle that will never take place and a point that will never be properly proved. But the reason the point isn't being properly proved, unfortunately, is because whilst Nick never wishes to stand, Joel and Tom have been banned for standing. And that does at least say something about how much the system did not want them to stand. Now, again, had it been the NSN that was banned, it would be very different. But the fact this is a political party, I also think, undermines what Nick's saying. Because, you know, to ban a political party suggests a certain degree of fear from the establishment. It's not like just a totemic ban of a group. It's a ban of an actual competitor, in the same way that, you know, if Nike decided to ban Reebok from making trainers, you'd say this is anti-competition. This is unfair. You know, to ban someone else who may go on the ballot and take your seat and your income and your position in parliament is anti-competition.
You got to understand too, when we grew up in Australia, we were taught by the schools, by our parents, everyone said that there's like a contract between us and the government, that all the laws that the government makes represent an agreement between the people and the government, because we get to have freedom of expression and we get to choose our own political representatives. So the laws are an agreement, they're a contract. But what the government has just said is that's actually all bullshit. Sorry, fuck you. The laws aren't an agreement, they're a threat. There is no contract, it was always a lie. Because if you can't freely express yourself in any country or system, and you can't freely elect your representatives, if the government controls all of that, it censors what information is available and it bans political parties on the basis of ideology or personal whim, then all the laws the government introduces are a threat to keep you obedient and doing as you're told. They're not a contract, they're not an agreement. So the boys just took what they were told and what they understood to be a democracy, and they played the game. They tried to register a political party and the government just said, no, everything we told you is actually a lie. You're going to go to jail if you try to register a political party. So, you know, no one actually predicted that. As I said, when Nick says, oh, I told you so, he didn't tell anyone that. He didn't think that was going to happen. He had no idea that was going to happen. No one really did. But you can't look at these guys and say, ha, obviously that was going to happen, because they should have been able to register a party on an ideological basis, as long as they weren't committing crimes, you know what I mean? But yeah, like I said, the contract between the people and the government seems to have just been set on fire, or perhaps it never existed at all. And perhaps White Australia Party exposed that.
Yeah, and that's a good place to end things. Thank you so much for being here tonight, mate. And I really, really value the fact you've got up so early in the morning. Next time you come on, we'll have to rearrange it so we start an hour later or something to, I thought you were genuinely getting up around 6 a.m., not bloody, for 4 in the morning. So my apologies. But you have been an amazing guest as always. Give us your final thoughts. We will all be cheering for you tomorrow. I hope it goes well. Final thoughts, mate, then we'll shut it down.
I probably said enough, to be honest. My final thoughts are just don't lose hope, I guess. Don't lose hope, and there's always a reason to take care of yourself and to make better decisions, and never use news like this as an excuse to give up. Certainly not on yourself, because there will always be a voice in your head, like an ego, trying to say, "Ah, why do I even try? Why does this even matter? This will never work. This will never go anywhere." But don't do that. Don't use bad news. Don't use government tyranny as an excuse to give up hope. There's always hope, and there's always a way to accomplish some sort of progress, some sort of result. You just have to keep getting up, making the right decisions, working out, eating better quality food, look after yourself on that individual basis, and there will be something in the future that you can believe in and contribute to. You just got to always have that hope. I think that's the best message I could leave, the best message I could finish on.
Well, thank you so much for being here tonight. It's been an amazing show. I think you filled us in on lots of things which are highly illuminating and really let us know just how bad things are in Australia. Australia's gone from sort of the land of the free, this country that was founded by essentially convicts who actually created a free and equitable place where people seem to live the good life, to becoming this draconian prison island once again. It's almost gone back to what it was originally intended to be, an island where white people are imprisoned and subjected to some of the most harsh conditions in the Western world. Extremely sad, and certainly nothing that your ancestors wished for future generations. Anyway, we're going to shut it down there. So thank you to Blair. Please go and check my Substack out. It's linked in the description. Please make sure you do that. Go and give it a share. Read the Henry Novak article. I'd like to thank everyone who donated. Remember, if you're watching on replay, you can still donate via crypto or by subbing over on Substack. And I will be back tomorrow with David Duke, back on Friday for a stream, and back on Sunday for a film review. Thank you to everybody who tuned in tonight. Thank you to everyone who donated so generously. Thank you to Blair. And finally, let's say a huge thank you to the wider community. Good luck to Tom tomorrow. We're all wishing the best for you. You know I love you all, and I'll see you again soon for another episode of Patriotic Weekly Review. Thank you all. Love you, and good night.